The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up, from m-enabling.com, the M Enabling Summit. Promoting accessible technologies and environments, 6 to 8 October 2025, Arlington, Virginia, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. Organized by G3ICT. Supported by IAAP, International Association of Accessibility Professionals, a division of G3ICT. Register now button. Already registered? Details at the hot link. Ready for a transformative journey into digital accessibility? Embark on a transformational journey by participating in the 2025 M Enabling Summit, where we will delve into digital accessibility innovation, a deep dive into next-generation user experiences from the perspective of the latest tech trends for organizational inclusion, gain insights and network discussions with business executives, disability advocates, developers, and policy experts across various sectors, including private, public, nonprofit, and education. A key feature of the summit is the Accessibility Professionals Forum, Hotlink, which will focus on accessibility within organizations at the intersection of physical and digital environments. Unable to make it to Washington, D.C.? No worries. You can still be part of the summit by joining us online. Access a curated selection of streamed sessions, interact with leading industry experts through our app, or catch up with post-event recordings. 2025 Key Topics: Agentic AI for Natural Interfaces, European Accessibility Act, EAA, implementation, drivers for next-generation assistive technology and user interfaces, accessibility in consumer product design, AI for cognitive accessibility, updates on U.S., federal, state, and local accessibility policies, fostering support for accessibility in the organization, AI tooling and developer support, inclusive design for smart living, accessibility startups ecosystem, AI solutions for speech, ICT accessibility testing, designing for older adults, standards and guidelines for the ethical use of AI, new frontiers for wearables, next-gen accessible media and communication, accessibility of software as a service, organizational leadership strategies, AI solutions for deaf and hard of hearing, making the metaverse, XR, VR, and AR accessible, digital health, accessible learning platforms, monitoring AI apps for safe and non-discriminatory outcomes, sponsors, ME Summit sponsors who are advancing accessibility and amplifying the impact. Explore our complete list of 2025 sponsors at the hot link. Platinum sponsor, EVINCED, and Salesforce. Business lounge sponsor, Amazon. Gold sponsors, AT&T, Level Access, Meta, T-Mobile Accessibility. And there are hot links to have an exhibit with us, registration, 2025 agenda, hotel and travel arrangements, what attendees have to say about the summit, informative and keeps the community pressing for improved accessibility, Harry Denby, Program Manager, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. A great forum for accessibility newcomers and veterans to share best practices, learn, and make new connections. Hale Pulsifer, VP Customer Inclusion, Disability Community, Fidelity Investments. Quite frankly, one of the most interesting and well-organized accessibility-themed conferences that I have attended in recent years. Stephen Winters, Policy Advisor, Transport Canada. Supporting organizations. Thank you to our ME Summit 2025 supporting organizations dedicated to advancing positive change. Explore our complete list of supporting organizations at the hot link. From acb.org, American Council of the Blind, Together for a Bright Future, challenges to 504 standards are delayed. The U.S. Department of Energy has once again extended the implementation of an earlier proposed Direct Final Rule, DFR, for an additional 90 days. ACB submitted comments to the department on the DFR back in July. The DFR wants to dramatically impact the regulations under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Builders would not be held to the same standards to make structures accessible for people with disabilities. In response, numerous individuals submitted comments in response to the rule. As a result of the significant number of responses, the implementation of the rule was postponed for 60 days. Now the department has once again postponed the implementation. We don't know what the final result will be, but it is still exciting to see the impact active advocacy can have. Posted September 15, 2025. Accessible paper currency. On September 15th, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, BEP, submitted its required semiannual status report to the court. This requirement follows the 2008 court ruling that well required the BEP to make paper currency accessible for people who are blind. The report explains that the BEP is on track to produce $10 bills with the raised tactile feature in 2026. ACB is excited and anxious to see this development in the next calendar year. Posted September 17, 2025. A link from ACB to speak4.app. Tell Congress to keep Bookshare free for all students. Bookshare is a book distribution program that has served people with disabilities for over 20 years. It serves students with multiple disabilities across the country for no fee. It has been funded through the Education, Technology, Media, and Materials Program, EdTech. Under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, children are ensured access to accessible education materials in an accessible format. For many years now, accessible materials for students have been provided by Bookshare. The EdTech program provides funding to procure the materials from Bookshare. The budget proposed by Congress will eliminate this funding. What the proposed budget would do is to split the program into a separate 50-state model where each state provides the books on a state-by-state basis. Such a model will be detrimental for students with disabilities. Bookshare has been providing materials for children for more than two decades and has an accessible platform to do so. Congress must maintain funding for Bookshare to serve students with disabilities. From fightingblindness.org, Lifeline for Children's Visions. Give kids a chance. Today, the House Energy and Commerce Committee is considering H.R. 1262, the Give Kids a Chance Act, which would reauthorize the Rare Pediatric Disease Priority Review Voucher, PRV, program, a taxpayer-neutral incentive that helps speed treatments for rare childhood conditions, including inherited retinal diseases, IRDs. Why it matters. Many IRDs begin in childhood and progress over time. Each year without treatments can mean irreversible vision loss. The PRV program helps attract private investments to small patient populations with high R&D costs, while maintaining FDA efficacy and safety standards. The program does not require taxpayer funding and has helped bring more rare pediatric therapies to the FDA for review. Our ask? We urge members of the committee to advance H.R. 1262 and restore this critical incentive for kids' health. Reauthorizing the PRV program will help speed access to life-changing therapies without taxpayer cost. Jason Menzo, CEO of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. Take action. Constituents can contact their representative's office at the hotlink to voice support for H.R. 1262. Read our open letter to the committee at our hotlink. Media Inquiries, Chris Adams, VP Marketing and Communication at cadams@fightingblindness.org. Call 410-423-0585. Also from fightingblindness.org, NACUITY, NACUITY's antioxidative therapy, NACA, performs encouragingly in Phase 1-2 clinical trial. NACUITY Pharmaceuticals reported positive results for the SLO-RP phase 1/2 clinical trial in Australia for NPI-001, an oral small molecule known as N-acetylcysteine amide, or NACA, which is designed to mitigate oxidative stress, thereby slowing retinal degeneration and vision loss in people with retinitis pigmentosa, RP, and Usher syndrome. Researchers believe NPI-001 can be effective regardless of the mutated gene causing the disease. The randomized placebo-controlled clinical trial enrolled 49 people with Usher syndrome and followed them for 2 years. The emerging treatment was safe and well-tolerated in the trial. The company is planning a confirmatory clinical trial in 2026 in the U.S. and Australia. Details for the confirmatory trial are forthcoming. In the slow RP trial, photoreceptor loss for patients receiving NPI-001 was slowed by 50% when compared to those receiving placebo. Photoreceptor loss was assessed by measuring the ellipsoid zone, EZ, area, the area of viable photoreceptors captured using optical coherence tomography, OCT, imaging technology. OCT is used by retinal specialists to assess retinal health and structural changes. Also in the clinical trial, loss of retinal sensitivity was slowed by nearly 30% for patients receiving NPI-001 when compared to retinal sensitivity for those receiving the placebo. Retinal sensitivity was captured using microperimetry, which measures light sensitivity at several points, loci, in the retina. The slowing of retinal sensitivity loss was not statistically significant, but correlated with slowing of photoreceptor loss. The RD Fund, the foundation's venture philanthropy arm, is an original investor in Acuity. These results are promising, and we're excited by NACA's potential to slow photoreceptor loss for a broad range of people with RP and Usher syndrome, regardless of their mutated gene, said Rusty Kelly, PhD, managing director of the RD Fund. We look forward to the forthcoming clinical trial for hopefully confirming NACA's efficacy. NACA is a modified form of N-acetylcysteine, NAC, a powerful antioxidant spelled N-acetylcysteine. Approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in 1963 for acetaminophen overdose and other uses, NACA was designed by Acuity to be more potent and bioavailable to the retina than NAC. Research has shown that loss of rod photoreceptors in conditions like RP increases damaging oxidative stress in the retina, thereby accelerating loss of cone photoreceptors. Rods provide peripheral and night vision. Cones provide the ability to perceive details, colors, objects in lighted settings. From the Cornell Daily Sun at news.cornell.edu. Decades-old drug deployed in fight against mitochondrial diseases, by Laura Riley, Cornell Chronicle, September 11, 2025. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, email, and share hot links. When doctors prescribe oxybutynin, it's usually for an unglamorous problem: bladder incontinence. But researchers have discovered a surprising new role for this decades-old drug, one that could open the door to treatments for a devastating class of genetic illnesses known as mitochondrial diseases. Oxybutynin is spelled O-X-Y-B-U-T-Y-N-I-N. In a paper published September 8th in the American Journal of Physiology, Cell Physiology, a team of Cornell researchers described their finding that the molecule oxybutynin can overcome mitochondrial dysfunction by enhancing cellular glycolysis to improve healthy muscle formation by interacting with a suite of proteins involved in mRNA function. Mitochondria are essential for our body to produce energy, said Joeva Barrow, assistant professor of nutritional sciences in the College of Human Ecology, who led the study. If mitochondria are damaged and can no longer produce energy, the cells die. The tissues die, and eventually the person dies. Mitochondrial diseases affect about 1 in every 5,000 people, and a large proportion of them are children, Barrow said. Patients often experience profound muscle weakness, neurological decline, heart problems, and, in the most severe cases, shortened lives. There are no cures and virtually no effective treatments. Our approach was to test a series of small molecules that have never been used to treat mitochondrial disease before, Barrow said. Previous attempts at small molecules therapy were unsuccessful because of the use of artificial cell systems, but our plan was to use these molecules directly at the source, the muscle stem cells themselves. After running a screen of thousands of small molecules, they saw oxybutynin emerge as a clear front-runner. They found that oxybutynin treatment can help muscle stem cells overcome one of the most severe forms of the condition, complex 3 mitochondrial dysfunction. Normally, cells rely on mitochondria to generate ATP, the molecule that powers nearly every biological process. In complex 3 disorders, that system grinds down, leaving cells starved. The researchers tested oxybutynin on mouse and human muscle stem cells, the cells responsible for repairing and growing new muscle. These cells, normally stunted by the disease, began multiplying and forming muscle fibers again when treated with the drug. The effect didn't come from fixing the broken mitochondria. Instead, oxybutynin rewires the cellular energetic pathways to perform glycolysis, the quick-burning process of breaking down glucose. That backup system provided just enough energy to revive growth. Using a high-tech small molecule binding protein analysis method, the team discovered that oxybutynin binds to proteins involved in RNA processing, the machinery that fine-tunes how cells interpret their genetic code. That interaction set off a cascade of changes, including a boost in amino acid and glucose transport into the cells. In other words, the drug seems to rewire how diseased muscle cells fuel themselves, finding clever ways to survive without fully functioning mitochondria. The results held true not only for mouse stem cells, but also for human ones. Treated muscle stem cells grew stronger, produced more muscle fibers, and maintained higher energy levels than untreated controls. Translating these findings to children with mitochondrial disease is happening in real time at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia with collaboration with Dr. Marnie Falk, Barrow said. Dr. Marnie Falk, F-A-L-K, is the executive director of the Mitochondrial Medicine Frontier Program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Their team performs biopsies with kids with mitochondrial diseases, and they are currently testing oxybutynin with those cells. While this is still far from a clinical therapy, no human patients have yet received oxybutynin for mitochondrial disease, the findings raise hopes that an old, inexpensive drug might be repurposed for a devastating illness. Oxybutynin already has FDA approval for treatment of bladder disorders, she said. For families facing mitochondrial disease, even small advances can be a lifeline. Most patients today rely on supportive care, managing symptoms without any way to slow or reverse the disease. If further studies confirm its benefits, oxybutynin could speed its way into trials, bypassing years of costly development, Barrow said. This work was funded by the Hartwell Individual Biomedical Research Award. From nfb.org and the Summer 2025 edition of Future Reflections, Environmental Ableism and the Importance of Environmental Education for Blind Students, article by Justin Salisbury. From the editor, Justin Salisbury is a graduate student at the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Minnesota. He has taught cane travel, braille, home management, and classes on NFB philosophy at residential and non-residential training centers for the blind. He works to bring the knowledge of the National Federation of the Blind into research, policy, and university training spaces. The idea that we must provide equal access to science education for blind children and adults is widely understood by the readers of Future Reflections. I am here to expand this idea to venues beyond the traditional classroom and to address the systemic environmental ableism that impacts the blind community. Our nation is making important decisions about the future of our planet, and blind people deserve to play a part in those decisions. Accessibility of environmental science lessons in the classroom. Publications of the National Federation of the Blind frequently include discussions about the importance of accessibility to curricular content in science classrooms. The lack of full access is a widespread problem. Many blind students are not given the support and equal access that they deserve, and this gap has material consequences for everyone. Our planet and all its inhabitants deserve to benefit from the contributions that all of us, including blind people, can offer to our shared future. In my high school, environmental science was treated as a second-class STEM option. It fell outside the course sequence that was designed to prepare students for competitive college admissions, biology, chemistry, and physics. There was no honors-level option in environmental science, and I was told that I was limiting my desirability in college admissions by taking environmental science. I took it anyway, because I thought it was important. I hear that some high officials now offer their advanced placement AP environmental science courses, and I am glad that more students today have this opportunity. The second-class treatment of environmental science can be a double-edged sword for blind students. Sometimes schools focus only on getting blind students to succeed in the widely accepted core subject areas. At other times, schools push blind students to those second-class courses based on low expectations. Regardless of how a school treats environmental science, blind students deserve to have an equal opportunity to study it with their sighted peers. Accessibility of hands-on environmental experiences. Performing environmental service is a great way for students to give back to the local community. It feels good to go out and help pick up trash or build or restore nature trails. As a sighted kid, I enjoyed these activities until my sophomore year in high school. Blind students deserve the benefits of these experiences, and our communities deserve the benefit of the service that blind people can provide. Kids who grow up understanding themselves as part of a community that takes care of its environment have a greater sense of social responsibility. In Hawaii, there is a common understanding of a concept called kuleana, which translates roughly as mutual responsibility. We have a duty to take care of our environment as our environment unconditionally takes care of us. Whether we do our part to nurture this relationship by living in the world we are a part of, something greater than ourselves. Blind kids deserve to grow up with this understanding as much as sighted kids do. Yet one of the ways that ableism acts within our society is by telling us that blind people cannot give back to the community. Blind people are perceived as needing help rather than being capable of making positive contributions. Environmental service projects are a great way to foster a sense of kuleana in our blind students. They can allow our blind students to show the community how much they can contribute. Unfortunately, however, many environmental service projects are not easily accessible to blind people. Often they are designed in ways that are not ideal, although this does not need to be the case. When I was a college student, I participated in an environmental cleanup project. The organizers handed each of us a garbage bag and instructed us to walk around campus picking up garbage. By design, that activity expected participants to visually scan a big area, spot pieces of garbage, and walk over to pick them up. That garbage could be unsafe to touch, but a person has to know that before reaching for it. I never hurt myself picking up trash, but I wonder what my life might have been like if I had picked up a used syringe, because my way of finding it was with my hands. A blind person can do this work, especially with sighted assistance, but it is not naturally accessible. When I worked in Honolulu, we once took our blind students to engage in an environmental service project. Traditional Hawaiian saltwater fish ponds are similar to human-made lagoons, with openings in them for the fish to pass through. When the tide comes in, the fish come with it. At high tide, gates are dropped over the openings. Then the tide goes out, trapping the fish in the fish pond. Our job was to strip the bark off mangrove wood so the wood could be used for the gates. It was a very natural activity for us to undertake non-visually. We could feel the spots where the wood still had bark, and we could remove the bark when we found it. We did our part, and it was very intuitive to us. Outdoor recreational activities. It is totally possible for blind people to take part in outdoor recreational activities, such as hiking. However, we seldom are encouraged to partake in these activities. Furthermore, many of the great places to engage in outdoor recreation are not located on public transportation routes. It does not have to be this way, but it often is. Sometimes this is because the people holding power and prosperity in a given area want to keep these outdoor venues inaccessible to people of lower economic status. Though not spoken directly, the idea is that the outdoor site will become less appealing once poorer people gain access. Blind people end up suffering due to these urban planning decisions. I experienced this lack of access with a beautiful seaside lighthouse trail that I loved hiking in Hawaii. Fortunately, I managed to find ways to get there because it was important to me, but it took extra effort and planning. Environmental ableism impacts blind people. I've spent a lot of time searching, but I have not found literature about environmental ableism that lines up with the concept that I want to present here. I am a mixed race person, which includes being American Indian. I hear a lot of discussion about environmental racism, which is very real. I think it has a lot in common with environmental ableism. If this description of environmental ableism sounds similar to environmental racism, that is because it is similar in the way that I think about both concepts. Consider these core principles of environmental ableism applied to the blind community. Bullet points. Environmental issues disproportionately impact blind people versus sighted people. Because access to public transportation is disproportionately important for blind people, many blind people end up living in cities, where pollution and other environmental hazards may impact us disproportionately. Because of our marginalization socially and politically, the blind face barriers to fighting against environmental justice issues that impact our community. Housing projects for the blind, schools for the blind, and other blindness-specific institutions may be housed in areas with less desirable real estate. These areas may be at a higher risk of exposure to environmental hazards. Blind people have less access to financial resources that help people to move to more prosperous areas, which tend to be less polluted. Poverty and lack of affordable housing exacerbate environmental ableism. Low-income communities often have limited access to clean air, clean water, and green spaces. Blind people have less access to environmental benefits, such as state parks and other green spaces that may be off public transit lines. Taking collective action. When environmental issues impact the blind community, organizations of blind people such as the National Federation of the Blind can take action to try to address those issues. If environmental hazards come up at a school for the blind, the affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind in that state may advocate to address that environmental issue. When something affects a blindness-specific institution, it becomes a blindness issue. If a school for the blind has a problem with its drinking water, blind children in that school will be affected. The societal conditions that made that environmental hazard possible were likely influenced by attitudes about blindness. If blind people are perceived as less valuable than others, protecting the spaces that we occupy is less of a priority to the larger society than it would be if we were perceived as equal to the sighted. I ran out of time. There's only one paragraph left, but it'll have to wait. I am Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Vision News. Today's episode was underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. So long until next week.